Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It is Tuesday. Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Thanks for joining us this evening. On tonight's show, Lansing School Board member Charles Ford was on the program last week. He explained why he voted against the district's revised three-year plan. I'll be joined by the board president tonight to explain why the rest of the board voted for it. And concealed weapons in school dorms, bars, even stadiums. The measure moving through the Capitol. I'll talk to the bill's sponsor to find out why this change is needed in the current law. But first, another day of oral arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court over the Affordable Care Act. Today, the focus was the individual mandate, the suit brought by the National Federation of Independent Business, calling the measure unconstitutional, although it's not clear if the court will agree. To talk about why the NFIB is taking the lead on this issue, I'm joined by the Federation's Michigan Chapter State Director, Charlie Owens. Charlie, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure, Michael.
I'm guessing you've been keeping up on today's court proceedings, although from the excerpts I read, it's hard to tell how the court will rule. Maybe they'd like to keep us guessing, huh?
Yeah, you can get, if you go to the Supreme Court's website, you can actually get the audio of the 2 hours of arguments. I don't know if you have to be a geek to listen to all that, but it is pretty interesting.
So according to the nonpartisan Urban Institute, small employers really have the most to gain under the Affordable Care Act, at least the employer provision portion. The law imposes no financial requirement for small employers to contribute towards their workers' health insurance costs. However, it does provide some tax credits for small employers to maintain or begin offering coverage to their workers. Charlie, isn't that a pretty good deal for small business owners and their employees?
Well, like most folks that are supporting the plan and are on the side of the administration on this issue, they like to point out the small business credits that are built into the law and focus their arguments there. They neglect to mention that only about 12% of all the small businesses in the United States would even qualify for those, number one. And number two, they phase out. So even if a small business does meet the criteria, and by the way, that's kind of a complicated calculation. It's based on how many employees and how many hours they work. But even if you manage to jump through all those hoops, the credits disappear over a period of time. And what we think will probably occur, even for those small businesses that would be able to get those credits, is what will happen is they'll disappear at about the time that we're going to see some serious spikes in the cost of coverage because of the way this act is designed.
Although one of the aspects of the Affordable Care Act that people are expecting is the companies will, in fact, be dumping their employee health care plans and letting them get into the health care exchanges. Some expect that to be at about 20% of businesses. Is that not something any small business can do?
Yeah, I think what you're going to find, first of all, you know, below a certain employee level, the proponents will claim that they're not affected because they don't have to comply if they have less than X number of employees. The challenge with that is we've seen that in many other pieces of legislation where we start, you know, by saying, okay, everyone over 50 employees has to do this, everybody under doesn't. And then over time, they just gradually ratchet that down until pretty much everyone has to do it. So, you know, that doesn't give us much comfort.
Isn't the individual mandate structure that going to take some of the burden off businesses to provide health insurance, at least those that still do nowadays?
No. The theory there is that you're going to force people into the marketplace that currently are not participating, and that those are the younger people that would help the experience of a pool because they'll be putting money in, but they won't be taking money out in the form of claims because they're younger. We don't think the individual mandate's going to withstand constitutional muster. If you look at the news coverage and if you listen to some of the testimony, or I should say the oral arguments that took place today, it's pretty clear that the Supreme Court is not very sold on that concept either. If I had to encapsulate, I would say skepticism reigns supreme, no pun intended.
I'm talking to Charlie Owens. He's the state director for the Michigan chapter of the National Federation of Independent Business, which brought this lawsuit that is now being discussed in the Supreme Court. You know, Charlie, we have over a million uninsured Michiganians right now. And a big reason is that many of them are getting jobs that don't include health care. Many of them have existing conditions. So what are they supposed to do? And how productive is an employee when they're not getting health care?
Yeah, we've never said that there's not a problem with the current health insurance system. And we have offered suggestions and ways to make it easier for small business to provide this coverage to their employees. And we've also had suggestions for those who do not have an employer, such as the self-employed or people that find themselves between jobs. Unfortunately, this act doesn't include any of those recommendations and doesn't take that approach. I think your earlier observation is spot on, and that is what's going to occur if this act is implemented is employers are just going to throw up their hands and say, you know what, I'll pay the fine. I'm not going to sit here and figure out how many I've got with times this many hours and how much their income, their household income is, and based on that, if I don't, you know, provide this much coverage, then I have to pay in this much. They're just going to say, what's the fine? I'll pay it. And what's going to happen is all of these folks are going to flood the health insurance exchange as individual purchasers because, you know, their employer's given up. I don't think that the exchange is going to be able to withstand that kind of influx of people looking for insurance.
Isn't that the whole point, to get everyone involved so that we do have lower costs across the board?
Well, you know, we have a no-fault insurance law in this state that requires everybody that drives a car to carry insurance. And we're also one of the highest states for people who don't carry insurance when they drive. So you can mandate it. I don't really see a lot of practicality in enforcing it. Some of the demographics of the population are such that it's going to be very difficult to force them into participating in the healthcare market. And I think, too, people need to consider just how much of an assault this is on their individual liberty. In the case of those that are getting their health insurance through the employment system, this information is going to start showing up on a W-2 form, and the government's going to make a decision on whether the plans they're in qualify, and if they're not, they're going to be penalized through the tax code. So the IRS is going to be the muscle, if you will, to try and enforce this. You have folks that don't file tax returns. You have folks that don't have addresses. So to suggest that, you know, you're going to wave this magic wand and require everyone to be in this pool, that's not a very practical expectation.
Well, it's not going to be a perfect system, and I'm guessing it's going to have to change over time, but it's going to bring in a lot more people and a lot of workers, frankly, that are working for small businesses who right now have no insurance whatsoever. Won't it be beneficial in the larger context, even if it's imperfect?
No, I don't think so, because what it's going to do is it's going to drive up the cost of health care. The government's going to try to capitate the cost based on the reimbursements through this system, and it's going to lead to rationing. And you're going to see an overall diminution in the level of in the quality of health care that, frankly, Americans have come to expect. So I think that it's one of these things that sounds real good in the short run, but the more you look at it and the more you see the way it's supposed to operate, the more clear it becomes that it's not going to work.
But what example of a successful version of this is the Massachusetts system? They have their healthcare exchange. They have they're not covering everybody, but quite a lot of people, and it's been successful so far.
Well, I would differ as to whether that's a successful program. We know that when we were testifying against the health insurance exchanges, it was brought up, for example, that the Massachusetts model has, you know, stabilized the cost of healthcare. And the percentage increases have been less than other states. Well, the problem with that analysis is it ignores the fact that they were one of the highest cost states to begin with. So what they've done is they've stabilized the cost of health insurance at an unaffordable level, that hasn't really improved anything. And it still remains to be seen how that particular experiment is going to play out, because the cost of health insurance and the premiums relative to that program have increased substantially.
Well, okay, finally, one vision of this is that this will be successful, will be considered constitutional, will be implemented, and will have, if not everybody covered, a lot more Americans getting preventative health care, avoiding major health catastrophes. What is your vision of the other potential future then?
Well, if you look at the Supreme Court case and the oral arguments that took place today, the administration started out very confident, very arrogant, that this was going to be a walk in the park, that they were going to basically breeze through the Supreme Court and that this law would be held constitutional. On Monday, they tried to make the case that they shouldn't even be in court until 2014, because that's when the taxes and a lot of the costs associated with the program actually come online, and that it was premature and the court shouldn't even be hearing the case. Well, they tossed that one out right from the get-go and made it clear that they were going to decide the case now. They weren't going to wait till 2014. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court asked a very basic question that, frankly, has been asked at the lower courts and all through this, and that's this. If we agree that the individual mandate that you're proposing is constitutional, where do you draw the line on what you will mandate next? Because if you're telling people that they have to buy something in order to prevent breaking the law simply because they exist, then where do you draw the line on what's next? And they have been unable to make a case that this is the benchmark and that we'll do it here and we won't ever do it again or we won't do it for something else. They cannot make a cogent argument that that's the case.
Well,
and the Supreme Court made it very clear that that's where a lot of their skepticism is coming from.
Well, we will see what the Supreme Court decides, likely in June. State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, Charlie Owens. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, Charlie.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you.